Mini episode 425 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 425. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here. We have a very, very special occasion to mark the quasi-August occasion of mini episode 425. And we have a tradition that we are bringing back in the FDH Lounge. We have been doing this every year for the last several years, I believe, going back to at least 2010. Traditionally, we have paired up our FDH Lounge dignitaries, Simon Applebaum and Lloyd Carroll, for this. We have one of the two today, and one, a very special guest that we are very proud to welcome to the program for the first time. We'll start with, again, my good friend Simon Applebaum, longtime FDH Lounge dignitary, and one of the smartest guys about all things media and technology that you will ever find anywhere. Of course, you can find the hub of his activity. It's one of the links on our Ultimate Links page. You can go find it there. Tomorrow will be televised. It is, of course, in the form of a running blog that he has going and his programming. He is, of course, a tent pole program over at Blog Talk Radio and has been doing that for quite a long time, now carried additionally by Brooklyn Independent Media HD. You can check him out there as well on the simulcast. We're very pleased to have him joining him today for the first time on our program, a longtime advertising columnist at the New York Times, a gentleman who has also written for a number of other publications, USA Today, Advertising Age, the Detroit Free Press, etc. Very proud to welcome to the program Stuart Elliott. So I'm very glad to bring them both in now at this time. I'll start with good friend Simon. Simon, welcome to the program. How are you doing today, my friend?
Very, very well, Rick. We, in fact, had our latest Tamavi televised episode a couple of hours ago, and it's a pleasure to do your show now as a simulcast. We are the first internet radio and blog talk radio show to be simulcast on, as you mentioned, on Brooklyn Independent Media, which is near the Barclays Center. And it's a pleasure to be back on your show with someone like Stuart. Stuart's one of my favorite people covering the world of television and advertising, and it's a pleasure to be paired up with him.
Thank you.
It is indeed a pleasure. Yes, thank you for being here today, Simon. And Stuart, a real pleasure to have you on the program here today. Sir, how are you?
Good. Thanks.
Good to be able to have a discussion with you guys about all things TV up front. So it's been, as I say, one of our most beloved segments that we've done over the course of the last couple of years. Here on a show where nothing is off topic, we do, of course, like to talk a lot of TV and pop culture. And this is where you get your read on what's going to happen for the next year, obviously. So I'll start in the direction of the up fronts. And again, I want to thank you, Simon, for making a few suggestions to me on some topics that we could cover today. One of the first ones that jumped out at me, of course, the absence of some of the networks that did not hold up fronts this year. It's, of course, a changing landscape. You've got the new fronts that are out there. I'll start with you, Simon, on this. Your thoughts about the networks that chose to go another way.
Well, the thing is that these upfront events, which started back in late February and wrapped up last week, they really have become more than just showing advertisers, here's the programming we've got. And here's what's coming up this fall and this summer and beyond. It has become an image deal. It's a way through the press and ultimately to the public to tell them, here's what we've got coming up. Here's what we stand as a network. And it seems in recent years, if you don't do an upfront, you're out of sight, out of mind. Cartoon Network did upfronts the last couple of years, stopped doing it last year, and you didn't hear much about their programming in the press or in public. TV One, network aimed at African Americans, had two very good upfront events. Have original programming, really have increased it, and again, you don't hear much about it. And I think now we're at the point with so much programming and so many networks in the ballgame that if you don't at least face the press with an event, if not press and advertisers altogether, I think it's a disadvantage to you.
Stuart, what do you think about that? The upside for avoiding doing upfronts is obvious. You save what is probably an exorbitant expense in some cases. But please detail for us the downsides and what some of the networks may be losing in just looking at the bottom line here.
Well, I think that given the interest in the media in covering the upfront events nowadays, it surprises me when some of these larger producers and providers of programming in particular don't take advantage of that interest. But I think in some cases, as Simon said, there's a cost issue. In other cases, perhaps they don't have as much new programming or interesting programming as they were hoping to, and feel that they're not going to look good in comparison with all the other presentations that are going on between February and May.
And even, Ricky, like Viacom, which has sort of a mixed situation with upfront. You have some of their networks, MTV, Nickelodeon, and others, doing very well in terms of presenting events and showcasing themselves. And then you have other networks from Viacom, like VH1 and Spike TV, which is about to make a major move into scripted television, and Comedy Central, which has had a tremendous year in terms of original programming, like Broad City, Inside Amy Schumer, and of course they're about to have the switchover with Stephen Colbert going to The Late Show on CBS, and Larry Wilmore from the Bernie Mac Show coming in with his new Minority Report series next year, and they're not doing upfront. So again, there's this whole there's a cost issue, obviously, but for a company like Viacom, you wonder why can't they all get together like NBC Universal did with their some of their cable networks last Thursday and put one event on that satisfies everybody.
Actually, and you know what? That's a very good point, Simon, and I know that you were hoping to get a little bit of input here from Vox Populi, so shortly before the taping, we put it out there on Twitter to tweet at us, at the FDH Lounge. If anybody had any questions, I want to thank at Sprosty457 for this one. It starts to go into what you were talking about there, which is why I thought it was a good time to read this, and that being the thought behind NBC doing what they were doing, NBC Universal, bundling up all of them. To my knowledge, I think that was more or less unprecedented. I mean, maybe two or three networks getting together before, but an entire umbrella of them. So, again, his question being, what was their thought process behind doing that?
I have no idea what the inner workings of these executives' minds or their assistants' minds might be. And again, it varies from year to year. Some years a network will do a presentation, and the next year they'll just have something as a press briefing. Some years it's vice versa. Some years they just skip out altogether. It's other than the major players who present every single year, it's sort of hard to read the tea leaves as to why people choose to go or not go in any particular year.
I think part of the psyche was on the part of NBC Universal Cable is, okay, we've got this bunch of cable networks like USA and Sci-Fi and Bravo and E and Oxygen and Esquire and Sprout that at least fall under the banner of general entertainment or specialized entertainment, E covering the world of entertainment news or Sprout being more toward kids and families. And I think they felt that, all right, we can at least do an umbrella all-together kind of campaign and see if it flies. I thought for the most part that upfront Thursday was pretty good. It was fast-moving. It was basically a human highlight reel. Each network got one or two clips of their most important shows coming up. I thought the one thing that didn't work was that Sprout basically got the short end of the stick. Even though they had their talent there, they were just in little video clips. They did not have a segment of their own. And it left me thinking, you know, maybe Sprout should do its own thing. Just like, for example, with Discovery Communications, which does a big upfront with all their services, one of the networks that's usually left out is The Hub, which, in fact, is about to make a major transition into family programming from just kids programming. I think they should do their own thing, either with a press event or with their own deal for advertising.
Interesting. And there was, of course, a big business story that came out of the NBC cable upfront. So I'll direct this one to you at first, Stuart, because I think that the crux of this one involves advertising, and that being, of course, the renewal deal that was announced by WWE for their programming. Raw, which has helped keep USA as the number one network on cable. Sci-Fi is getting SmackDown again, presumably to stay on Friday nights. Unfortunately for Vince McMahon, unable to control his bravado in recent months, talking about possibly doubling or tripling their price and throwing out comparisons to NASCAR, when in fact they didn't even do nearly as well as MLS did earlier in the week on their renewal, at least comparing as a matter of scale. So what does this tell us, Stuart, about, again, ratings versus demographics, what advertisers want to see? It's undeniable that the WWE is a behemoth on the landscape when you're talking about bringing in people for DVR-proof programming, such that only actual sports probably really compare to that. But there really can't be a lot of respect in the advertising community, one would think, because the numbers are not nearly congruent with what they would be if this were a sports property or something that didn't really have that taint on it.
Well, you know, there's so many factors. I don't know, maybe the NBC treasury is depleted, having shelled out yet more billions of dollars to carry yet more Olympic games. I'm not, unfortunately, privy to the decisions, and I have to say that wrestling is a very good way to reach younger men who, generally speaking, watch less television, but perhaps given the availability of it, and now I think WWE has its own channel or operation. They're doing something on their own. Maybe the feeling was that there's going to be a surfeit of this kind of programming, and it didn't warrant paying more for the rights or as much as WWE had wanted.
Absolutely, and maybe there's some leeriness about the fact that, again, they've now got their own over-the-top operation, which they like to compare to a Hulu Plus or a Netflix, because it pretty much operates the same way. Yeah, maybe there's some thought that they'd like to move their programming there at some point, and they've already moved a few of their shows there, like the one from ION TV. Simon, what do you think about this as far as, again, there's a real deficit there between when you're looking at the ratings that are pulled in versus the respect that comes in terms of network dollars attached to it, it seems like.
Yeah, that was a big boomerang. When WWE made the announcement, we did not know what they were going to say the next morning at their investor when they filed their quarterly report and said, well, we didn't get as much money as we thought we were going to get for renewing that pact with USA and Sci-Fi, et cetera. And then on top of that, oh, the WWE Network, we're going to have to get more subscribers to break even as a way to sort of allocate for pay-per-view or to make up for lost pay-per-view revenue. And I think the combination of both really boomeranged. So if you're a WD stockholder, your stock really plummeted. And by the way, that was not the only boomerang that happened that day, last Thursday. Earlier in the day, the CW announced their fall season lineup, and the CW management presenting at City Center was saying, hey, our ratings are going up, we got some fun new shows and so forth, everything's hunky-dory, people are watching on social media, they're watching online. And then Peter Liguori, at the same time, at an investor conference, the chief executive of Tribune, which is one half owner of the CW, says exactly the opposite. And what I think is one of the most amazing situations I have heard in a long time, I don't know about you, Stuart, but it came really amazing that while CW was saying their thing at City Center, here's Liguori over at an investor conference saying, guess what? CW is not pulling its weight. The ratings are awful. And we may just pull out of this thing if they don't shape up.
Yeah, it was interesting because his point was that he felt that they weren't running enough programming aimed at older audiences, and that was exactly the theme that was stressed repeatedly at the CW upfront, was that they are expanding their programming offerings beyond the shows aimed at younger women. So I don't know if there was some cross signals that day or Peter was trying to make a point and talked at cross purposes to the CW executives, but it really was sort of discordant, as Simon says, in that in one hand, one guy is saying, oh, yes, our programs are reaching older audiences and men now, and then this other executive is saying, we want more programming on the CW that reaches older audiences and men.
And he was even going forward, Liguori was even going as far to say that, hey, we're programming the wrong audience. A lot of the people you're trying to reach are not watching television. And by the way, there's a bit of a controversy over whether millennials, young people, are watching more or less whatever televisions. But the interesting thing about the CW is that for years there has been this feeling to some quarters of the CW is an emperor without clothes, that they usually are among the top five broadcast networks. They're in last place. They're regularly beaten by – their ratings are beaten by Univision and Telemundo. And what the CW responds to is, hey, if you factor in our online viewership, if you factor in the fact that social media gives a lot of buzz, we make up for the being last place among the top five broadcast networks, last of the totem pole. And LaGore was basically saying, you can't use that argument anymore, and if you don't shape up, we're going to pull out of this network.
That's one of the greatest business stories I've ever heard right there. How not to do corporate synergy. You got one message going on at the upfront and another one going on with the suits talking to the investors. That is hilarious. Well, when we're talking about the CW, I mean, that takes me to one of our perennial topics when we're doing this segment. Simon, I know that monitoring diversity, that's always a big flashpoint for you during these things here. And it takes me back to a couple of years ago. I think Paul McGuire with his phone call to the show to defend the CW when we were talking about them and some of the elements that they had going on then. And the CW is, again, not necessarily the worst in this light, but there's somebody that we've kind of singled out in the past. So what's your sense, Simon, year to year on this, on how the networks are doing on the diversity, both in front of the camera and behind?
It has really gotten far, far better. And you can take a look at what ABC is going to do this fall on Thursday night when an African-American person of color, Shonda Rhimes, is going to control the entire Thursday night with Grey's Anatomy at 8 o'clock, Scandal Now at 9, which is the hottest drama at the moment on broadcast television, and then her new show, How to Get Away with Murder, with Viola Davis, Oscar nominee for The Help, getting her own shot at a show. We are definitely seeing more diverse, both broadcast and cable, by the way. We're seeing more shows aimed at people of color, starring people of color. There still is an issue in terms of writers and directors of color. The Writer and Directors Guild studies continue to show that 1% of all episodic television every year is done by women of color, and maybe 12, 13%, 14% by people of color. So there's a long way to go in that. But the big thing is we are really seeing movement. It's no longer just lip service.
Well, that's very interesting as far as any changes that are coming. And I have to then turn to you and ask you, Stuart, in terms of the advertising community and how they view this. Because, again, we all know in life that's what will drive anything more than all other factors combined, the almighty buck. Are the advertisers clamoring for more of this? Or are their voices starting to get a little bit louder saying, hey, we would like to advertise on programs that reach a more diverse audience, or is that not really the case yet?
No, I think it's been true for some time that the trend has clearly been in the direction of marketers wanting to reach out to consumers in a way that reflects the changing demographics of the country, particularly since the 2010 census results showing the growth of the Hispanic market. There's been a real push on that front. And clearly, I think at the ABC upfront, there was specific discussion of diversity and the need to have programming that with cast members who reflected the broad diversity of American society. And some of the other networks, they didn't talk about it, but they did it. And some of the networks really didn't do it at all. But part of the flip side of that now is that you have such an enormous array of channels and networks that are available. If you look beyond the big four or five, there's 100 channels or more now that are tracked by Nielsen, and the diversity on some of the cable channels is especially noticeable in terms of their efforts to reach out and have cast members and characters who represent a broad spectrum of society.
And equally
absolutely
important, Rick and Stuart, is that we're seeing more ways to get that diversity. You look at Netflix, you look at a show like Orange is the New Black, which I think has become one of the great, will end up being one of the great hallmarks of diversity. You're seeing Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and Crackle and so forth come up with shows that are featuring diverse cast, and in some cases, diverse people behind the diverse writing and acting and directing production talent behind the scenes. And we're also seeing more ways for people of color to get into the field through things like the New York Television Festival, through the growing crowdfunding movement. Before doing this program, we learned that the Walter Cates Foundation will be doing a special event next month, Hollywood Creative Forum East, which will be focused on scripted television as part of the first ever American Black Film Festival happening here in the Big Apple. And that's new. So we're seeing more and more opportunities for people of color to get into the business. But and it also shows that you cannot just focus on one avenue to make diversity happen. You got to hit on every level, from general market programming to networks aimed at African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, gay and lesbian community, et cetera, to behind the scenes, to production companies, to things like the crowdfunding movement. You've got to make it all happen, and it has to happen because we're on the road toward a situation where we are going to be half of the American public or more, the majority is going to be people of color. And if you don't reflect that on television, both in front and behind the camera, no matter what enterprise you have a problem.
Well, unsurprisingly, I have to say, Simon, we've been doing these segments here for quite a while and obviously developed a great amount of chemistry doing that. You saw the no-look pass coming before I could make it, because I was about to segue to that, and I want to keep going on this. The whole thing about the networks that are out there, the different avenues. We touched on it briefly before, and they're not really the best example of what I'm going to talk about here, if for no other reason than they're not really doing advertising. But when I was talking about the WWE Network being an over-the-top one, you now have all these other different non-traditional avenues as well. You mentioned Netflix, Amazon. You've got Hulu/Hulu+. You've got Crackle, which is going to have Dan Patrick doing Sports Jeopardy once a week in the fall. So let's go there for a second and look at that, Simon. The impact, because it's been a couple of years now, I know the new fronts have been part of the upfronts here, some of the online-only or online-predominated events there. But how is that really starting to change the shape of the landscape here of what is considered to be TV programming and traditional methods of reaching consumers?
Well, for one thing, Rick, it's proof positive that one of the great, great inventions of this still young century is the smart television set. The set that allows you to watch the web, use the original interactive apps, and watch your favorite TV shows on all the broadcast and cable networks. And because more people are using smart TV sets to watch Netflix, to watch Hulu, to watch Amazon, that's why they're getting into more and more scripted television programming. That's why Microsoft next month will be starting Xbox Entertainment Studios to do both scripted and unscripted programs on the TV set. And that also is raising everybody's bar. You know, everybody's watching what Netflix is doing. They have already, here it is mid-May, they've already green-lighted a ton of original programming. You look at Sci-Fi, which last month green-lit 6-7 original scripted shows in a month. Who would ever thought of that? And then, of course, you have all the stuff that came out with the digital new fronts. So, it's proof positive that we are seeing this incredible revolution of online television becoming TV because of smart TV sets. However, there's still one issue with these new fronts. The ceremony's gotten better, but one of the things that all of these services, and I have to say I was really impressed with everybody from BuzzFeed to Nat Geographic to Glam Media, et cetera, they're still not telling the advertisers when these programs will happen. And that's the big difference between that and the upfronts. When the upfronts happen, you know at the end, here's when NBC's premiering their shows. Here's where the CW's premiering their shows. Here's where USA is bringing their shows. You still don't get that with the new fronts, and I'm amazed that after 3 years of this, people like AOL, Microsoft, et cetera, are still not getting the message.
I do have to say, though, in their defense, that this is an enormously difficult situation to get this stuff on and to schedule it and then to promote it to the consumers. I mean, there are big broadcast and cable channels that during their upfront presentations were telling us about shows that were coming on that they had announced a year ago or maybe even 2 years ago. There are several cable channels that said they were going to start, that specialize in reality programs, that said that they were going to start offering scripted series, and it's taken them 2 or 3 years to get their first scripted series scheduled.
Yeah,
so
probably.
In their defense, there is this is not an easy – it's not – you just can't – flip a switch and say, we're going to have a show about a wacky policeman and his funny neighbor, and it's going to be on 9 o'clock on Thursday, and then it magically, 22 episodes are magically ready 3 months later to get on the air. I mean, there's a lot of slips, what's the, many a slip twixt cup and lip, and, you know, a lot of these situations where they have the best intentions, and sometimes the pilot comes out bad, or sometimes they have to recast it, or sometimes they can't get the right time slot, and sometimes I think they just promised the advertisers and the media who attend the upfronts more than they're than they can actually deliver.
Yeah. By the way, one other thing about Microsoft, they really set a huge bar for themselves, because what we're talking about here with Microsoft is interactive programming. This is what we've been looking at for years, on and off, the idea of television series that allow the viewer to interact with the programming in an intimate, personal way. And it was ironic to find, to talk to people who were watching the Microsoft upfront, that what they were disappointed in the most was not the shows, it was how these programs were going to be interactive. What are the features you, Microsoft, are going to bring to the table that are going to attract the viewers? And it's also interesting, by the way, that since then, Halo, which is a Steven Spielberg series, live action, that has been promised by Microsoft, may go on Showtime first before it goes on Xbox or other, or from their smart TV sets. So I think it's very interesting that here you have Microsoft that really set a very high bar for itself, and I think it's going to be fun the next year or so to see how much they deliver.
It really, really is. And, again, we hear a lot about second screen experiences that a lot of shows try to promote. So with these interactive programs, it will be interesting to see how much further they can take it. But inevitably on this, Stuart, I have to pivot to you and ask the question, because, once again, the driver of a lot of this kind of stuff, the broad acceptance by consumers out there of online programming, particularly the older ones, it'll be when the advertisers really start to get behind it and start to treat it as being even a fraction of being on par with network and cable programming. So what's the progress on that front as far as advertisers really treating this in terms of it being a serious audience?
Advertisers are definitely interested. They're following the consumers. As consumers are more and more willing to watch online programming, original programming, digital streaming programming, there are advertisers that are following them there in the same way that advertisers that were very big on the radio, once television came in, they just moved their advertising dollars off of radio onto television. Nobody is suggesting that online video is going to replace television anytime soon or maybe ever, but clearly a lot of programs for a lot of advertisers for several years now have shown a willingness to put money behind well-produced, interesting, well-done online original programming. So as the new fronts become more sophisticated and as more of these online publishers demonstrate an ability to create programming that consumers want to watch, I think that trend will continue.
And by the way, Rick, two new fronts I was very impressed with in terms of original material and people doing it was Maker Studios and BuzzFeed. Even though they're doing short-form programming, I have to say the quality of both of those companies was outstanding, and it really carried the day for them.
Unsurprising, because they've really both developed a reputation for quality over the last couple of years, so I could really see that being the case. Next question I've got is also at least somewhat about advertising, so I'd like to direct this one again. I'll start with you, Stuart, and that being the notion of it. Talked about it earlier, too, and it's interesting how many times I reference back to this, even though my questions aren't about them directly, but I had said about WWE being considered DVR-proof programming in line with sports, and obviously when the sports packages are out there, that's what they're selling, is we are DVR-proof, people want to watch us live. I'll start with you, Stuart, on the sense of, were there any shows out there or any networks trying to pitch programs as being must-view live in a way where they could calm the fears of advertisers that their commercials might be fast-forwarded through?
Yeah, that was a big trend this year, as it has been the last couple of years. The new term for that, the new buzz term for that, is eventizing. The idea is mm-hmm. they want to turn everything into an event, just like a live sports match or game or an award show is an event, you know, event TV or big event TV, as it's called. The goal now is to turn scripted shows into events, too. And one way they're doing that is by scheduling more of these limited run series that have a defined beginning, middle, and end, and in many cases have huge production values and famous movie stars in the cast. Another way they're doing that is to try to pump up the episodes of their regular series, their bread and butter series, by trying to schedule those original episodes, new episodes, fresh episodes every week for a certain number of weeks, so that it isn't broken up, the momentum isn't broken up with reruns and preemptions as often has been the case. So yes, the search for a way to get people to watch programs live in real time and not zap and zip and DVR them, that continues apace. Yes, absolutely.
Well, and Simon, I know that you're always focused on not just where the industry is, but obviously where it's going and what the trends are. So I'll take that and pivot to you and ask what you think about how this bodes for where the landscape is heading here and if networks are going to be successful in the next couple of years in doing this, or if they're just fighting against a rising tide that's still going to swallow them.
Well, it's interesting, Rick, that with looking at these upfronts, it's not just about the show, it's where you schedule them. And I think scheduling and also knowing when to keep a show going and when to cancel it or when not to cancel it has become as big an issue as the quality of the shows themselves. And a very good case in point from last week is The Blacklist. The Blacklist is clearly the number one new scripted success story and TV and show of the season. And right now there's a lot of people who think that NBC may have coming up the biggest masterstroke of scheduling to watch this year, or it could be a backfire. And here's what I'm talking about. At the start of this fall season, The Blacklist will stay on at 10 o'clock right after The Voice on Monday nights on NBC. But then in November, it's going to be pulled off the air for a couple of months. It will then get a Super Bowl, post-Super Bowl play, and then it will be moved to Friday night to Thursday night at 9 o'clock, where it'll be up against Two and a Half Men's final season on CBS. It'll be up against Scandal, right now the hottest dramatic show right now on ABC. And you wonder whether we're in for another situation like Revolution, which last year was the big number one new drama series, but then NBC put it last fall on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock, clearly not the right time period. And last night the show had its final episode without really a finale, and it just put it away.
Well, that would be a dramatic fall if indeed it goes that way, clearly because of how high it's riding right now and what the buzz are and what the ratings have been. That is definitely something to keep an eye on. I'd like to bring this full circle by just asking you guys in general for any other notable surprises, big happenings, anything we haven't talked about yet that you consider to be really noteworthy coming out of this year's upfront season. I'll start with you, Simon.
One thing, going back to scheduling and shows, I was really surprised at ABC. I was very surprised at the shows ABC did not cancel. You got to give ABC credit this past season for doing an all-original, all-new Tuesday night, but the bottom line was it bombed. There was no question that Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was the big disappointment of any television network this year. The show's ratings have plummeted. They have plunged. It is not doing well. The show creatively is a mess. And guess what? It's going to come back. Move to Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, and there's going to be a spinoff with Agent Carter. And you got to wonder what mentality ABC is at now. I think, obviously, the thing is that ABC, parent Disney, owns Marvel, and they want to give it another shot. But unless Josh Whedon and his gang dramatically upgrade that show, I think that ABC is in for a really bad Tuesday night again this year. I also thought they should have canceled Nashville. They also should have canceled Revenge. Once Upon a Time, I think, has had a wonderful three-year run, but the ratings are going down. I was really surprised at the number of shows that ABC did not cancel. And you have to wonder, given that they were last place in audience this year, total audience, you know, what they're going to do, you know, whether they may have made too little moves when they should have made a lot of moves and put more new shows in.
Definitely surprising patience on the part of ABC in a lot of cases there, no question. I kind of had the same thought myself. Stuart, anything else that we didn't talk about that really jumped out at you at the upfronts this year?
There's going to be a big trend in the fall, which has already started, and it's going to accelerate, and that's in terms of content of programming, something that one of the people I interviewed recently described, he called it the political procedural. It's sort of like a police procedural, only it's set in the world of politics, and it's either the actual sort of the carters of power in the White House and Congress, or maybe a spy setting like with the CIA and the FBI, or some combination of all of those. And clearly this has been inspired by the success of shows like House of Cards on Netflix and Scandal on ABC and even Veep on HBO. It used to be years ago that political plots were considered poison on mainstream television, and they would stay away from them. There were these notable ringers years ago, a show called Grandpa Goes to Washington and some other bombs, and the conventional wisdom was that you never set a show in Washington or with a political setting, that seems to have changed now, and we're getting a lot of these shows. Another executive I talked to called it the Homeland Effect. He said the success of shows like Homeland and 24 is also inspiring all of these shows with political plots and spies and various intelligence and cyber security and counterintelligence and all this kind of stuff. So that looks like a very interesting trend. It'll be interesting to see how a lot of those shows do in the fall.
I would also throw in two other things, Stuart. One, on a fall note, is the impact of Thursday Night Football going simulcast on CBS and the NFL Network. I think it's thrown a monkey wrench with everybody in terms of how to schedule and how to program. Big Bang Theory is going to move back to Monday night, which has been on an incredible roll. That show is, you know, with all the plays in syndication on local stations and on TBS, where it's still one of the top, it is the top cable rerun show, that the ratings were the best ever for that program. And it'll be interesting how Thursday Night Football works its way on CBS for 8 weeks. And then what happens when CBS makes it just an NFL Network thing. So I think it's one thing to watch. But then something else to watch is this summer. There's some very interesting new shows that are coming up this summer, and two of them are on FX. I think they're going to be the most interesting shows to watch, The Strain from Guillermo del Toro and Tyrant, which I hear is a marvelous program that was filmed overseas.
It's interesting. The Strain is going to be on Sunday night at 10 o'clock, and I believe that's the first time that FX is going to be running original scripted programming in that very competitive time slot. So that's going to be very interesting. I agree.
And then one other show is WGN America's new series, Manhattan. I'm hearing a lot of buzz about it. There's some very good production people behind it. One of the great success stories this spring was Salem. WGN America, the former Chicago superstation, now doing original programming under Peter Lagori and a wonderful former FX executive, Matthew Chesmere. He may get my vote as one of the best new executives of the year when all is said and done. Salem is off to the races. It's coming back for a second season, but a lot of people think Manhattan may be what cinches WGN's reputation, at least early on, as a new place for quality programming.
Well, these are definitely some things to keep an eye on, and as far as what Stuart said a moment ago, definitely the one constant year to year in these things here is monkey see, monkey do. And if you're getting some success in a certain genre, in certain quarters, like political procedurals, then you're only going to get more of that. And next year, I'm sure it'll be a different trend. And the year after that, perhaps a different one. But it is always a lot of fun to cover this year to year. And I want to say, again, it was a big pleasure to welcome you in for the first time, Stuart, to one of these panel discussions.
Thank you.
Hope it won't be the last. Pleasure to follow you in the New York Times.
Thank you.
It was really great. I thank you for your contributions to the conversation. And as always, my good friend Simon Applebaum, again, you can follow him at Tomorrow Will Be Televised, and we have the link up on our Ultimate Links page as far as how to find his blog and his programming there at Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, as you mentioned, Simon, the first one out there, simulcast on Brooklyn Independent Media HD. Great to have you on as well, Simon. Thank you so much.
You too. Thank you, Rick. Stuart, always a pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
I want to thank you both for being a part of this, and thank you all for tuning in today to FDH Lounge mini episode number 425.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time
Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.